Greg, can you please give a shout out to the boys from Pobl Scol Gwydor who are playing in the FEI School Boys National Cup final today in Longford at 1 p.m. against Hazelwood College, Drumcolliher, Limerick. We wish them all the best of luck and hopefully they'll bring the cup back to Donegal. It would be great to hear horns tooting around Gwydor a little later on. Good luck, guys. We wish you all the very best. A tough game, but I'm sure all the preparation and effort is going to pay off and you're going to do us so proud. But anyway, you've already done us proud by getting to the final. Well done, Dr. Joe Kelly says it like it is, speaking out to tell the reality of the economics in Ireland with this whitewashed budget that has ignored the carers of Ireland, the rural community having no or few buses, students having to pay extortionate rates to get accommodated, the elephant in the country, MICA, and the DCB homes whitewash. I get the carer support grant. Is there any rise in the carer support grant that is given once a year? We'll try and get an answer to that. I don't want to be misleading in any way, shape or form. It's quite a specific question. Hi, Greg. I think you should listen to this interview. Well worth it. Well done to this teacher who had the courage to become a whistleblower and then resigned. Absolutely disgusting what this government and others are trying to install in our young students' minds. We'll get to that. There's a lot of this video has done the rounds. It's got an awful lot of traction, folks. But there's one thing about that video that I want to say, in that all of this stuff that's being taught in schools is available. We can access it as parents. And, you know, it shouldn't come down to, and fair play for the teacher speaking out. I've watched some of the interview, not all of it, but fair play to the teacher speaking out. She's given up her conscientious, she's not teaching the SPHE anymore. But this stuff is available. I've went through the SPHE for my children throughout their students' life. I wanted to know what they were being taught in the schools. The information is there widely. And I think it's very important that we as parents take the responsibility. Yes, it's great when someone exposes what's going on, but we have a role and a function and a responsibility to ensure that we know what's going on. Great budget, loads of handouts. Great to see the OAPs and carers, etc. being looked after. But what about the working people? Take, for instance, bus escorts who care for special needs children. Haven't had a pay rise in over 6 years. Last pay rise was 7 cents. Yes, 7 miserable cents. They'll be under the minimum wage now in January. Something badly wrong there. We've been engaging with some of those bus escorts and we'll hopefully speak to one before the end of the week. If you are a bus escort and want to speak out on that, please get in touch with us. Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson is Donegal Deputy Pearse Doherty. He is with us now. Imagine why, Pearse. Thanks for your time today.
Imagine why, Greg.
Right, OK. Your take on this budget then. An election budget, or how do you view it?
Look, I've said before, and I said yesterday, it's very easy for this government to splash the cash, and we know they've been doing that plenty with bike sheds and security huts and modular homes that are costing twice as much as what was planned. And they're talking about the National Children's Hospital and that runaway train. But what really has been missing here, Greg, is there is absolutely no vision, no idea. Like, at a time when we have €24 billion of a surplus, more money than we're spending, and they decide not to give extra money to housing to build more houses than they already plan, even though everybody is telling them that their housing targets are so low, they're inadequate. It's one of the reasons why we have a crisis. Their own housing commission has told them that. They've called for a step change, and yet they stick with the old plan that isn't working. We see
one of the barriers to housing, though, is infrastructure, isn't it? It's connecting to the water, it's connecting to power, it's getting there by road or what have you. I mean, there is significant investment there in those areas, isn't there? You know, in terms of the power grid, our water infrastructure, the building of roads, all of those factors can then perhaps lead.
None of that money.
I have to be balanced here. My point is, you know, the targets only become realistic if you have the infrastructure there to provide them. That's the point. Whatever you have to say yourself.
Absolutely, Greg. Look, I agree with you. You obviously need the water infrastructure. You need the sewers infrastructure. You need all of that, and that's why we've argued for increased investment in the likes of Irish Water and all of that. The money that they announced yesterday from the $3 billion AIB shares isn't actually being allocated. You know, like, this isn't money that's been allocated next year. It's not part of their budget books. It's not part of the arithmetic. Look, this government are masters at spin. Like, if you were listening to the budget yesterday, you would think that they allocated €1.25 billion to housing to the LDA. They announced that last year, and that's just to deliver on the targets that they have for next year. The targets are so low, that's the problem. So what we needed was a big, big step change. Like, we've produced our housing plan, Housing for All, in which, you know, we're going to deliver 300,000 houses, 125,000 of them social, affordable, cost rental. These are houses that you can buy for 250,000 euro and up. They're, you know, houses.
Yeah, but you never make money out of that house, and you don't own the land.
You can actually, you know, you can make money out of the house, Greg. What you can't do is you know just flip it and make the subsidy that the state has put into it, which will be well over 100,000 euro. You can't actually benefit from that. But absolutely, if you buy this house and it increases with inflation, you can sell that on to another affordable purchaser, and you can make it in profit. Or indeed, if you enhance the house, you can make profit as well. That's not the issue. And you can give the house to your kids as well without any issue, or to your grandchildren. So, and that's why the experts have really welcomed our plan, because it is a step change and it can end the housing crisis if it's delivered. But that's where the vision was missing. And it wasn't just in housing. If you look at health, like, how many times have you talked in your show about the issues of health? And it's not just what's going on in our hospitals. It's about children with additional needs who can't see a therapist, who aren't getting treatment. The kids that we have in Donegal that've got scoliosis and spina bifida, and the challenges that they have as their curvature is getting worse and becoming inoperable. What did the government do in terms of health? 120 million euro extra on health across all the sectors. Like, that isn't going to cut it. So you're going to continue to have people calling into your show telling you how bad things are at, because a decision was made yesterday not to deal with that, despite the fact that we have the resources.
In relation to that, though, I'm not sure the public want to see money pumped into the health service unless it seems like it's going to deliver value for money. You mentioned the security hut. You mentioned the bike shed, and I've seen you've built your own bike shed. You mentioned, what else did you mention there? The children's hospital, right? The public want to be assured that their money, and it is their public's money, is spent responsibly, right? So how can Sinn Féin ensure, if in government, that we don't see the OPW as a law unto itself, that we don't see massive overruns in children's hospitals or in roads? A road into Letterkenny here, 10 million over budget. It's not even blinked about, really. Yet we get all up to high dough about a 330-year-old bike shed. You know, and also, do we really want to keep pumping money into a health service that seems to just soak it up? And any increases that went to Letterkenny went to pay increases and what have you as well. So how will Sinn Féin make sure public money is spent responsibly and with accountability?
So first of all, the minister sets the tone for the department. The minister sets the culture in the department. So see, when we have ministers, as we do in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which says nothing to do with me or no accountability, and the merry-go-round keeps going round and round, then that allows the type of culture that we have. So, like, I can speak for myself. I can speak for my own party. We would not tolerate that. You go in and from day one and you say, this is public's money. There are people out there who are slogging and sweating and, you know, working their hard day's work, and they're creating the taxes that goes into you squandering 336,000 euro on a bike shed or 1.4 million euro on a security hut. Those days are over. Those are the days of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Those are the days of the wasters. We would not tolerate that. Like, so it is about the culture, it is about the ministry. And what has the government done so far in the bike shed? They're just commentators on it. They haven't held anybody account, they haven't called in anybody, you know. And it's the same with the National Children's Hospital. It was the Simon Harris who signed this contract over and over and over again. We were raising the issues of overruns in the hospital last year and the year before, and they were saying that we were acting against the national interest. That's what, you know, the accusation is. It's pull on the green jersey, hunker down, we're all in a club here, and just you know be quiet and do the bit for Ireland. Like, this is taxpayers' money. So it is about the tone, it is about the culture, and what we have after 14 years in government. And this happens not just in Ireland, it happens across the world as well. When you've got people that are too long in government, they get flywheel with the taxpayers' money, and that's why you get bike sheds, security huts, modular homes for Ukrainians that were supposed to cost 200,000 euro, now costing 440,000 euro.
Yeah, but that's because homes. The OPW, amongst other things, skipped skipped measures that should have been put in place to ensure this couldn't happen. But again, the public, they hear the word OPW, right? They don't know how many is employed in it, who makes the decision, what's the management structure. Again, there is just zero sense that there is any accountability. We're not looking for anyone to be hung, drawn and quartered, but it will just fizzle out until the next OPW scandal, or maybe it'll be in a different department. There doesn't seem to be any face to any of this. The HSC, we can have massive controversies in a local health setting, inquiry after inquiry, but where, to what end? Where does it go? What happens? The planning report sitting on a shelf somewhere, too controversial to dust off and publish. Why? Where is the accountability?
Look, Greg, all the questions you're asking, I asked the same questions myself. I actually put them to the government yesterday. That there is no accountability. Look, the government want to kind of say it's the OPW. The OPW is part of the Department of Public Expenditure. It's a part of the Department of Finance. It is the minister that oversees this. You can't have a situation saying, oh, it's an OPW, it's the HSE's fault. It's this, where the accountability is in terms of the minister at the end of the day. I'm not expecting the minister to be across every single project and all the rest. But when there's enough concern raised that there is waste, wanted waste that is happening and project runs over, what you expect is a minister to roll up their sleeves, to get stuck in, stop being commentators and protect the public.
Okay, well,
demanded that over and over again.
People may be of the view they send the elect you and send opposition down there to scrutinise the government. I'll put the same thing to you. You can't be across everything, all right? But you have a big team. Why does it take a whistleblower or a freedom of information request from the press to discover these controversies? If you, as an opposition, can't effectively keep an eye on the government and OPW in terms of overspending and overruns, and I know the obvious ones, the hospital, you have been very vocal on that. But if you can't be, if you can't hold the government to account and raise these issues rather than commentating on them when they've been raised elsewhere, how could the public trust Sinn Féin to do everything you want to do the government when you actually have the purse strings then?
Because politicians don't get these contracts. They don't get the details of these contracts. The only way we get this information is putting in the freedom of information ourselves, which we have done on the National Children's Hospital, and we've exposed over and over again what is happening. The Controller and Auditor General is supposed to look after the public purse, and it's them that exposed the overrun in relation to the Ukrainian modular homes going up 120% and being 2 years delayed. It is our chairperson who chairs that Public Account Committee and is holding sessions now to actually get to the bottom of this here. But see, as a minister, you have an entire department. And the minister isn't just the Minister of Public Expenditure. It's also about reform. It's about, the point I made to the minister is, see the community groups in Donegal. See if they want to hold a little lunch. They have to get tenders for who's actually going to provide the sandwiches. Three tenders. They built a bike shed for €336,000 that they didn't even get a tender for. This is just outrageous stuff. Outrageous stuff. There is community groups across my constituency, across Donegal, that are looking for that type of support, but they can't get it. But when it comes to, it's a bike shed. The country's livid about it, the question that people are asking is how much more of our money has been wasted.
Okay.
And it is wasted in a big, big way.
Your party effectively has probably less than 2 months to drive the message home to the public. There's no point raking over old coals, and polls are polls, but at one point, and I'll tell you, forget the polls. When I'd be out and about, I'd be polling people and wondering what they were voting. And a lot of people were going, it's time to give Sinn Féin a chance. We've had the same old for years and years. It's time to give Sinn Féin a chance. And I'd continue to ask this. And then what I've noticed, and it did kind of align to the polls, Sinn Féin are the two cheeks of the one backside. They're not an alternative. They just do the same. And as I say, completely anecdotal. But you've about 2 months now to sort of get back to being seen as a viable alternative, right? How do you do that? What's your focus going to be on? Is it accountability in the spending of public funds? Is it going to be focusing on some of these OPW controversies? Or is it going to be talking about what Sinn Féin will do? But unfortunately, I think sometimes our attention span is so narrow that that might not actually be effective talking long term in changing public perceptions.
So let me say this. What you are hearing on the ground when you're doing your wee polls is what we heard as well, particularly after the local and European elections. And I said this in your show before. We've made mistakes. It's us in Sinn Féin that made mistakes, and we know the responsibility in us, because we know that there's a huge amount of support out there for us, and they really do not, and they can't afford this government to be in place for another 5 years. So I think everybody accepts that if we're not having Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government, then it will be Sinn Féin, and we're the only alternative. So there's a huge responsibility in us. But we were not clear enough in relation to what we stood for in, as opposed to the government. And that's why since the local and European elections, we have come out with very detailed policy and very clear alternative on international protection and immigration. We are very clear and a different approach in relation to that. In relation to tax and fair taxes, we're very clear in abolishing the USC for the average worker, taking €45,000 out. In childcare, a radical proposal that guarantees people €10 a day childcare. On health, we're going to be announcing our health policy in the next couple of weeks. It is huge, big, impressive, and delivers the capacity. You said people don't want money wasted. Absolutely not. But we need more beds in our hospitals in Letterkenny and in our community hospitals. And we need more professionals working there. And we will show you how that can be done through Sinn Féin's plan. And again, we've shown in terms of our housing, which has been supported by the experts out there as the way to actually deal with the housing crisis, how we can build houses at scale, ban rent increases, and make sure that we end this housing crisis. Right. So we've listened to what
mean testing carers is a big issue as well, and I think your party has a policy in relation to that, but it's a big deal.
To abolish the means testing carers, yeah, and that's a direct like listening and a lesson, a very expensive lesson learned from us in relation to what the public were telling us, and we've listened to them, we've taken it on board, and we know the job that we have to do. It's not going to be easy. Like, we're trying to do something that's never been done in the history of the state, and that is put Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out of office. They've always been in government for 100 years. It's not going to be easy. There's going to be powerful forces against us, including those parties. But we're up for the job. Right. You know, we're up for the job. And, as I said to Simon Harris, call the election. We're ready for it. We have the policies. We have the team. We have the vision. I think the majority of the people know that another 5 years of Fine Gael, 19 years of Fine Gael in government, it's unthinkable for a lot of people, and
we'll see.
We need to convince people that there's an alternative.
Okay, thanks for your time. Deputy Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin Finance spokesperson. And of course, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been in power for 100 years. Well, that's a record. What a record to have. You know, it may be, and it is obviously the case that enough people continue to vote for them because they think they're doing a good job. And don't see enough in Sinn Féin to change the way they vote. You know, sometimes I think it's framed that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been one or other have been in power for 100 years as if it's a negative thing. I mean, those two parties might say, well, the public have trusted us for a century to do what we've been doing. They may well do so again. I expect the current government to be returned after the next general election, at least Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, if they continue to want to work together. I don't see them really chipping at each other so close to an election, so I imagine they are going to work together again. So it's going to be another endorsement from the public for what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are doing. So obviously, if democracy is democracy, they are there for 100 years because people are happy with what they've done, and it looks like they're going to go into their second century as well. But that being said, everything can change between now and most likely November 22nd. We'll wait and see, but I'll tell you, we'll keep you up to date on everything that's happening here on the 9 till noon show. Taking a break from the budget, but it still is really about budgets and how budgets are spent, because I read that Strabane ratepayers are funding 69 Derry events and only two in Strabane. Scott Moore has been talking about this on social media and joins us on the programme now. What is the background to this, Scott, and how does it break down? And when we talk about ratepayers' money, I presume it's we're talking about events that the council themselves are supporting.
Good morning. So this first came to my attention because I was actually doing a bit of research about buses in the evenings, and so I was trying to figure out, well, the buses stop after a certain time. So the last bus back from Derry to Strabane is at 8:20 p.m. And so if you're looking to get to Derry to get to an event, then and you want to get there by public transport, you need to be getting the last bus back at 8:20. Otherwise, you need to take a car or a taxi. And as I was looking into this, I looked on the Visit Derry website, and despite the name, Visit Derry is funded by Derry City and Strabane District Council. So Strabane ratepayers are contributing towards Visit Derry, and it does promotes events and venues in the wider Northwest. So it promotes venues and events in Donegal and Limavady and the wider Northwest, and indeed like towards Oma. But like what I noticed, like I'm not against Visit Derry promoting events in Donegal and Limavady, but what my, like in principle, but my issue is that whenever I was looking through the numbers, like I counted like 69 events were listed on this website on a certain date, a council-funded website. 69 events were listed as happening in Derry City, and then whenever I counted like the events in Strabane, there was two in Strabane Town. So there's a drama festival at the Alley Theatre, which is 6 months away. There's Fulton's Pumpkin Patch, which is outside of the town. There's like a Donnamatta Direction. And there's, I think there was the Strabane Halloween event, and there's also the Burns Night event being held in Brady.
So obviously, obviously Derry City is much bigger, different venues and all that kind of stuff. So you'd expect more events to be promoted in the Derry City area than you might in West Tyrone. But proportionately, 69 to 2, you'd expect more in Derry than Strabane perhaps, but 69 to 2, that's a huge gap, isn't it? And doesn't really talk to perhaps the amount of events that are held in Strabane stroke West Tyrone.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because like people forget, like, yes, Strabane is smaller. The Strabane area is smaller than Derry, but it's still 30% of the council's population, if you consider the Strabane area. And we're not seeing 30% of the events that are listed on this website, which is in part funded by Strabane ratepayers, reflecting Strabane events.
But what an interesting point you also... what an interesting point you made as well, too, right? So say you accept it is what it is, to use the horrible phrase, or overused phrase, Scott. While Strabane taxpayers, residents effectively, are funding these events in Derry, unless they have a car, they really don't have access to them either. So the funding stuff, as you've outlined at the start of the interview, the funding stuff, really, they can't get to and from back on public transport.
Yeah, that's part of it. I will make the distinction. So the events on the Visit Derry website and also on the council's own Integral website, What's on Derry Strabane, the events on those websites, like a good few of them, like many of them are funded by the council, but not all of them on those websites are funded by the council themselves, but they are promoted by the council. And so that's the issue that I'm pointing towards. And it is the case that, like, if you look at those, like, I counted a bit before I counted the 69 events that were happening in Derry, a few days before I counted 61 listings in Derry City. And of those 61 listings, 36 of them go on past 8:20 p.m., meaning that they're inaccessible in part or wholly to Strabane residents unless they're going by car or taxi. Yeah. And so if Strabane ratepayers are paying to promote these events, and they can't even reach them by public transport, and they're not even getting four events in the Strabane area over a 6 month period being promoted by this website. That's completely disproportionate, and I don't think it should be viewed as acceptable. And there was a time when people, like 20 or 30 years ago, when people are like, oh, who would want to come to Derry? What tourist would want to come see around Derry? But it's a completely different story now. And I actually had some, whenever I posted this on Facebook, somebody posted, who would want to stay at a hotel in Strabane? And this is somebody from the Strabane area. And like, I think we need, in
that's
some cases, we do need to back ourselves 100%. A bit more, you know, because it wasn't that long ago that people were saying that about Derry. And I don't have any issue like with hotels. Like the other issue was like, there's what's called the autumn offers page on the Visit Derry website. And it's like hotels and resorts for the most part that are being promoted. There's someone like off the top of my head, I think there's 8 hotels being promoted that are in Derry.
But just in relation to that, and sorry to move it along, like, so Scott, I mean, we don't think, do we, that those behind this and the ex-posts and what have you are being Derry-centric, or maybe they're based in Derry and they think that the world revolves around it. We see that in other towns, but I'm not saying that's the case. Like, are Strabane businesses offerings events doing enough to say, hello, excuse me, we've got this event coming on, we want you to plug us as well? Now, maybe we shouldn't have to back ourselves, as you said, but perhaps maybe it's easier to gather the information and to disperse it if you're based in Derry and focused on Derry, and maybe those behind events and functions and hotels and what have you need to do more to say, all right, where's our space on these platforms?
I don't entirely buy that, because if they're getting Strabane ratepayers' money, then I think it's incumbent on Visit Derry and on the council to be reaching out to event organisers in Strabane. Like, I've been in contact with Visit Derry. I've had email correspondence with the CEO, Oran Dunn, I believe his name is, and he's said that it's the onus is on like the businesses and the event organisers to come to them and put these submissions in. But if it's a council-funded website, in part, if it's Strabane ratepayers that are contributing to this, I don't think it's too much to ask that they be a bit more proactive. Whenever there's 4 Strabane events in the Strabane area being promoted on this website against 69 Derry events, I think it's not too much to ask.
For sure, listen, and they should understand, because Derry and Donegal are similar. Obviously, we're neighbours and all that, but Donegal's distance from Dublin means that Donegal feels forgotten. And then sometimes within Donegal, a lot of focus is on Letterkenny, and other parts of Donegal feel forgotten within the county. I think it could be the same. Yep. Derry and the Northwest in general feels that it's underserved by Belfast, but then we don't learn those lessons, and then we have areas within the Northwest that feel underserved by the powers that be within that area. So we should have learned more. Yeah. Listen, thank you very much. Very informative, Scott. Appreciate it. Fair play to you. Good luck to you.
Thank you for having me on. And my website is Scott. Yeah, my website's scottmurr.xyz. So that's scottmurr.xyz. And I'm going to be trying to post once or twice a week, just about local issues and issues further afield, and trying to hold people in power to account on these issues, and making sure Strabane gets his fair share, but also talking about other important issues as well. So that's scottmurr.xyz. Yeah. That's my blog.
Be the change you want to see, isn't that it? Fair play to you. All right, thank you very much indeed for that.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. Find out more about the Energy Efficiency Grant, aimed at helping businesses to operate in a more sustainable way, by visiting localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Chris, you're very welcome back to the show. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
This beautiful Wednesday morning across the northwest here. I'm looking at the branches, which are the only thing from the outside that I can see. And they're not moving. Nice and still.
Beautiful out there. Really still. Okay. November or October, nice crisp month. Great for getting out. Yeah.
Right, let's get to some business news now. And the latest motor trade figures, vehicle registrations, i.e. vehicle sales, are out for September. What do they tell us, Chris?
Yes, the Society of the Irish Motor Industry has released the figures for September. And new car registrations nationally were down at 10.3%. And here in Donegal, well, we've slightly bucked the trend. In fact, if you look at the whole year to date, January to September, sales up about 7%. But interestingly, we always seem to touch on this, our dear friends, the electric vehicle registrations in Donegal are down by a third far this year.
With no charges, we don't have enough public charges. Yeah. It really is so bloody simple.
294 down to 196 units so far this year.
Or it could be early adapters. You know, some people are waiting
There's a number of factors
more to
there.
Come onto the second-hand market and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, it's indicative. Do we know the most popular cars?
It's much the same as usual with Toyota, Hyundai, Kia, Skoda. There seem to be the top
Porsches?
Four. And not at them. I haven't delved that far down yet.
He or she obviously didn't renew didn't change the Porsche.
roughly speaking, just, you know, it's interesting to note, petrol cars are about, well, it's a third, so it's just under 31% of the market. Diesels are about 23%. Then the old hybrid, which is petrol electric, 21%, pure electric, 13%.
Which is not insignificant, but I wonder, and this is a question you don't have the answer to, Chris, so I'm not expecting an answer. It's hard to get straight petrols and diesels now, and some of them are soft hybrids, and I wonder, are soft hybrids included in hybrids or in the petrol and diesel figures? It'd be quite interesting to for me. I don't think it'd be interesting to anybody else, so I might just check that out and just keep that information to myself. But still, not insignificant car sales, and us bucking that national trend from a relatively low base, you could argue. Right, okay, Leo offices, what's going on there? There's always something going on.
Interesting just to note that there is a scheme out there really to help businesses on the digital front, and you can get assistance there and analyse just what you're doing online and how you can improve your business. So Digital for Business is the name of this support. So do contact your local enterprise office. And, you know, there's a lot of assistance there, be it financial, be it mentoring. And, you know, it could transform the way you're doing things. The supports are there. That's the big message. And it's open really to small enterprises that aren't already doing something with the IDA or Enterprise Ireland and between 1 and 50 employees. So 1 and 50 means it includes sole traders and lots of small businesses.
The local enterprise office pops up in some dates for our diary, Chris?
Yeah, just of note, Friday week, that's October the 11th, there's a business support clinic. Now, that's online from 10 to 11 in the morning on Friday, October the 11th, but it gives you a good overview of some of the supports there. And also just another one coming up shortly, the National Women's Enterprise Day, a range of speakers, Loch Esk Castle, October the 17th, and there'll be a big interest in that.
Rightio. Now, an interesting initiative in Inishowen.
Yes, Inishowen Social Enterprise, Esprit Agus Sport, when they have plans for a new sustainable fashion pop-up shop. Now, it's geared at young people, and it's basically a swap or buy a project. They're really looking at the sort of 16 to 25 age group. And of course, we hear a lot about fast fashion and people buy things, wear them once, and that's it. Now, this is all going to be launched on September the 26th of October in Carndonagh, in the Colgan Hall. And the project coordinator is Evie Nolan. And she says they're going to have well over 1,000 items of what they call pre-loved clothing available to swap or buy. And the hope will be that, you know, this will lead to further things. And they also will have a repair cafe where you can bring in your clothes to get fixed and learn how to extend their life. So we're seeing more and more of these things. And makes a lot of sense. And there'll be a DJ and music and all sorts of things happening. And we'll hear more about that maybe closer to the time.
I think so. Right. On this week's podcast, you're speaking to the owner of Pumpskins.
Yes. Catherine Devine is her name. She used to be a journalist. Change of careers, and she makes covers for diabetes devices that are brightly designed. They help, you know, if you drop them or prevent scratching, etc. But it's also helped to stimulate a conversation about these devices, because people may inquire, well, what's that? And, you know, you get into the whole conversation. So she's been updating me about her business, which has considerable potential. And indeed, Greg, here's quite a startling statistic. There's an estimated 500 million people around the world with some form of diabetes. Yeah. So you can only imagine the potential market. She has she's already exporting from just outside Letterkenny to around 20 countries. So she's built up a business. She's recently won a three small business enterprise award worth €10,000. So it's all going very well. And as we can hear in this clip, you know, these her Pumpskin covers are really helping so many people.
You know, when you wear an insulin pump, so just to give you an example, I noticed lots of times when I had my first insulin pump, it was just black and it's connected with a tube. It's pretty discreet. You know, it might have been clipped onto my waistband. But I'd noticed people looking at it, you know, and actually a couple of occasions where people sort of went, oh, you know, what's that? And that made me feel instantly uncomfortable and defensive and sort of, you know, almost hiding it away and embarrassed about it. But then I realized that when you've got a colorful cover on it, when you've got something that's sparkly or, you know, bright and colorful, it changes the dynamic of that conversation. So that initial interaction is someone going, oh, that's really cool. What is that? So then the person who has the insulin pump connected to them or who's wearing it can say, well, you know, and if they feel like they want to talk about it, of course, you don't have to talk about it. They can say, well, actually, this is my insulin pump. It's incredible technology. It's saving me from multiple injections every day. You know, it's helping to keep me alive. It's helping to keep me healthy. And they're in a situation where they can raise awareness about type 1 but in a position where they're in control of the situation and they don't have to feel embarrassed.
Yeah, you can see the multi-benefits to this, as well as that installing a bit of personality. And obviously, too, we, lots of people, everyone's different with how they treat medical attachments that you might have to carry around with them perpetually. But they do become part of you as well, you know, when people name them and customise them and all that type of stuff. So it gives people who want to the freedom to do that and start the conversation if they want to start the conversation, Chris.
Absolutely. And she really seems to be onto something. And indeed, she was contacted by a group in America who are very much involved in the promotion of assisting people with diabetes and bringing the subject to out into the public domain to a greater extent. And she's going to be getting exposure for her business at the New York City Marathon. So
brilliant stuff. And you can hear all of Catherine Devine's interview with Chris on Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast. It's available right now for you to stream online. Or download, if you wish, to listen at your leisure. Back episodes are all there as well, too. Great insight into the world of business in all different aspects of business. And it's available for you to listen back on the radio after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And I suppose, Chris, too, you know, we couldn't do the business news without mentioning the budget. And we know a lot of the headline stuff that's there. There's initial reactions to how it might impact the general public, workers and what have you. We're getting some sort of reaction from businesses and where it might go. A lot of the nuts and bolts of it, though, was yet to be announced. Various ministers hosting press conferences where the detail, where the devil often resides, the detail will be released. But your initial commentary?
Yes, it takes a while to digest it all, as you say, and more to come out. I think from the business perspective, the likes of ISME, which represent the small businesses, they've given it a pretty broad welcome. And namely, the fact that personal employee and earned income tax credits are up, and the cut in the USCU rate, and also initiatives like the startup relief for entrepreneurs that has been raised, and there's an employment investment incentive. I suppose the big blot on the business side are those, particularly in the hospitality sector, and many had been hoping for the cut in VAT, which has not come about, and that has taken up quite a lot of the reaction. But overall, on the business side of things, for small and medium enterprises, they seem to have given it a pretty broad welcome. And of course, quite a lot going into the whole infrastructural side of things. So that is naturally enough good for the economy in the longer term.
All right, we'll see. Chris, thanks very much indeed. If anyone wants to contact you, the podcast, how do they do so?
You can email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com. And just one other thing, Greg, you know, back to the old, we've spoken before about shopping around for prices on mobile phones or whatever, or your electricity, but don't forget the old fuel in your car. And this is just, I mean, I've even noticed this myself. There are some places you can get for unleaded under 160 a litre, and in other places you're paying well over 170. So you're filling up a tank. You could be €6 in the difference, €6 or €7. So do keep an eye when you're going
to shop around. Yeah. I'd be obsessed sometimes with mobile phones. Now, I did some statistics, not some statistics, some number crunching on it. And if someone wants the brand new iPhone, the new iPhone that's out, and decide to avail of a 2-year contract offered to get it for free, in inverted commas, it costs them an extra €1,500 than if they went with a cheaper network provider and even got a credit union loan out for the phone. Yeah. It's amazing the amount of money people are splurging. Mm. And that's I went at the cheapest with one of the big companies at the cheapest monthly contract at €65. There's some of them at €80, and at €65 they give you limited data download in 2024, crazy, and then obviously unlimited. You can get unlimited at $12.99. Do you know what I mean?
You're old enough to remember on your bill for your mobile phone in the early days, it was dear to ring after. Was it 6 o'clock or in the day? 9 to 6 was 10p a minute.
I had my first mobile phone with the same number that I have now, less a couple of digits because they had to put more digits in. And I had no one to text or message, and I sat there, and I think the battery lasted about half an hour. And I'd ring numbers and then hang up before the answer because it was so expensive. But you had to pay to receive calls.
That's right.
And not only that, you could have a group of lads sitting with a scanner in the pub listening to your phone calls on the old 088 network. Those were the days.
And if you received a call during peak hours during the day, it up what your credit was. Yeah,
it was crazy. And I didn't have the resources to have it. No. I was just, and still am, to be honest with you, ridiculously addicted to technology. And it was a lovely old flip phone, but I just had no one to text.
Poor Greg.
Because no one else had one. All right. I probably got myself buried in the mother of all contracts too, Chris. I used to get caught up with these. Like a new stereo would come out and I'd go in and, you know, these, I can't name the name of them in case they still exist, but you know these sunny day finance companies?
Yes.
You know, and you get a CD changer for $3.99 and pay back $7 million. I was a sucker for them as well. Okay, but thankfully I've matured slightly. We'll be back with more after this break. Thanks, Chris. See you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Before we introduce our next guest, I just want to wrap up the competition. The answer to the lyric teaser, of course, is Sweet Child of Mine from Guns N' Roses. Elaine Carlin from Carrigan's, you have won those trainers. Well done to you. You've won a pair of New Balance. We'll be in touch with you and we'll have another chance for you to win tomorrow. Right. JT Trainer is a high risk prevention manager at the Irish Heart Foundation. Good morning, JT. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back on the show. Right. I think sometimes we, and it's kind of mostly our fault, we attribute or associate medical conditions with one particular gender as if the other gender is completely immune from that. And we're kind of sort of trying to right that wrong a little bit today, certainly as it relates to heart disease and stroke.
Yeah, definitely. That's the whole idea behind our September campaign, the Her Heart Matters campaign that your listeners may or may not have heard about. Basically, what we like to paint the picture of, if you ask someone to visualize a heart attack, they usually visualize, like on TV or in a movie, a man clutching their chest and falling from a heart attack. And there is that, from polling we have done in the population, there is that that assumed knowledge that it is a man's disease, that heart attack and stroke is a man's disease. But what we know is that 1 in 4 women in Ireland die of heart attack and stroke, which is the same as men. And you're almost 6 times more likely to die of heart attack and stroke than breast cancer, for example. So there was a Lancet released a women's cardiovascular research study or research in 2019. And what it basically showed was, overall, across the world, women's heart health is under-researched and under-recognized. And because it's under-recognized, then it's under-treated because it's not diagnosed as quickly as possible. So what our Her Heart Matters campaign has been doing over the last 3 years, over the month of September, is really trying to raise that awareness with women of Ireland around the symptoms of heart disease and stroke, specifically this year with heart attack and the slightly different symptoms that can occur in women in heart attack, but also how to manage those risk factors. I suppose with the Irish Heart Foundation and in the Health Promotion Department, our calling card is the good news that 80% of all premature heart disease and stroke is preventable through lifestyle changes. So that's the real message. And we have loads of resources on our website that people can sign up to and have a look at about how assessing their own lifestyle and then maybe making small tweaks that we know can make a long and really impactful difference on the long term on their cardiovascular health.
Yeah, for sure. But we also need to be aware too, don't we, to recognise the symptoms of heart disease and stroke. And half of women don't, which then sort of talks and then feeds into maybe a greater awareness sort of the risk and the risk factors.
Yeah, so like as I said, a sample that we've done, a third of the population believes that women are at lower risk of heart disease and stroke. And what was most striking for us was women over 55 were more inclined to have this opinion. And we know that women over 55 are at higher risk. And that is linked to our previous year of the Her Heart Matters campaign. We focused a lot more around menopause because we know once a woman enters menopause, the protective elements of estrogen, for example, on the blood vessels, the women lose that protective element. and that's when their risk actually increases.
So yeah, but I've also spoken to other health professionals who sort of say that maybe sometimes women, as they go through menopause, put other symptoms of other things down to menopause and maybe don't seek assistance for them. So if you're over 50, in your mid-50s, you know, get your heart health check, because as you say, 80% through simple lifestyle changes can be avoided. But what symptoms might one look out for and not to attribute them to menopause or something else necessarily?
So there is the common symptoms like tight chest, difficulty breathing, feeling dizzy that are found among both genders, but there are less common symptoms that can be indicator of issues like back pain, stomach pain, extreme fatigue as well. So the fatigue, for example, can be something that people could attribute to menopause too. But our basic message is if you are feeling somewhat out of sorts in terms of these symptoms, it is better just to go and get checked and have that conversation with the healthcare provider.
Yeah, and listen, the reality is A, they'll say, no, your heart's in good health, or B, if they identify, hopefully, because a lot of stuff is treatable, give the person a pathway to improved health. Because, of course, you know, there's issues like higher blood pressure and stuff that often women can find themselves with, high blood pressure post-pregnancy. And there's loads of other variables that women need to keep a particular eye on. Listen, thank you so much, JT, for your time. If people want any more information, I know you have got great resources at the Irish Heart Foundation, but just signpost us there if you don't mind.
Yeah, so if you visit irishheart.ie or if you search for Heart Matters, we also, to culminate with the September campaign, we had a webinar yesterday, which over 5,000 women in Ireland registered to attend. Impressive. And you can still register for it, and we receive a recording. So there's great information from healthcare professionals and people with lived experience. And our comms team will be sharing snippets of that throughout the week as well. But on the website, on our Irish Heart website, we have loads of resources around how to check for symptoms, but also, as we said, how to assess your own lifestyle and maybe look at little tweaks and different behaviours that you could maybe adapt to improve your overall health.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for your help. I do appreciate it. JT Trainer there, High Risk Prevention Manager at the Irish Heart Foundation. And look, some might say, oh, bloody hell, another thing for us women to worry about. All health matters often seem to focus on women, but it's not about that. It's just about making sure that you double check that your heart's in good health, but also too that maybe you don't be too brave and put certain symptoms down to menopause, for an example, because both can happen at the kind of round about the same time. So make sure you look after yourselves so you can look after me. Right, okay, listen, thanks so much to all of you for listening to the show. We've hundreds of messages, by the way, huge reaction to the budget, but that means we can come back to them tomorrow because the story is going to continue as well. But thanks to each and every one of you who listened to the show. Maybe you chose to watch the show, we appreciate that too. We're back with you live tomorrow morning from 9. So from me, Greg Hughes, and the team, Caroline Orr, researcher and producer, and Shannon Wilkin as well, have a great Thursday, and we'll be back at 9. I said that. What I wanted to say was John Bresson's next around the Northwest.